Welcome to The Other Coast, a podcast detailing the Malifaux meta in Los Angeles. My name is Jeff, and with me here's another SoCal player, Colgan.
Hey, everyone.
Hey, Colgan. Sadly, Jim couldn't make it tonight, but we hope he's doing well. So, we are going to be talking about metas again. This is going to be a follow-up episode to something that we did almost a year ago now, or maybe even a little more than a year ago now. We have an episode called... what is it called again, Colgan?
Starting a Malifaux playgroup.
Gotcha. And it's, you know, it was our recollection about what it was like at the beginning when we tried to build our meta, and we kind of talked about, you know, maybe some tips or some comments on our experience about building a meta, and hopefully some people have found it useful. And with the pandemic having, you know, quite an outsized impact on gaming as well as obviously more significant aspects of life, it seemed like a good time to kind of take a look back at, you know, how our meta survived, where it's at now, what we think we're doing well, what we think maybe we can improve on, and yeah, that kind of thing. So I guess to start us off, Colgan, how do you think our meta's doing?
I feel like it's probably doing as well as could be expected. I think we've mentioned it in other episodes, but we had a couple of like the really active players move, which kind of hurt it. I think considering the pandemic, like our play level is probably about what could be expected, but it does kind of suck to like come in and see only like a few people playing Malifaux versus like pre-pandemic where we had like maybe 3 or 4 games of Malifaux going on like every Saturday.
Yeah, if you kind of poke around on Tyler's data sheet, you could see the graph how before the pandemic, you know, we were doing pretty well, maybe 4 games or 3 games on a slower day and up to like 5 or 6 on an active day. And we, you know, now we're getting to the point where a good day is maybe 3 or 4 games. So I think we definitely have taken a bit of a hit, not just in terms of the number of games, but also just, well, I don't want to say quality, because that implies that the people who are still playing, there's something wrong with them. But I mean, not the players who've moved away, they're not like so much rank and file players, right? You know, Jim moved to Maryland and Jim's a, you know, very well-skilled, very seasoned player who is really into the game. I mean, enough to do a podcast and a YouTube channel. You know, Tyler's moving away soon, and he was enthusiastic enough to keep up games on Vassal during the pandemic and to, you know, help us with the data tracker. And, you know, Liam and Kevin and, you know, just people. I feel like the people who've moved away have been fairly significant members of our community.
I like how you just said this wasn't a quality thing. You said they're not the rank and file people.
I mean, once you start comparing, or at least start comparative language, it's pretty easy to get to awkward places. but what I mean is that the people who left, they were very reliable in terms of their scheduling and in terms of their interest in the game. And of course,
right,
we love casual players. There's absolutely nothing wrong with being, you know, the sort of person who might show up once a month or once every other month or whatever. But it just so happens that the people who moved away were, I think, kind of the more committed members.
Yeah, I'm just going to leave you to kind of wallow in that.
I mean, hopefully you were just thinking about, you know, what it is that you could be doing to drive away our better players.
I mean, it's like my knee flex reaction is to say I agree with you, but I feel like this is not a good position outwardly to agree with you on, being like, yeah, I feel like the current players now aren't dedicated enough. So I'm just going to... Well, next topic. So,
So I guess I think part of what brought this episode on is that I was expressing that I kind of felt that our meta was slowing down, or I guess stagnating would be a good way to describe sort of how I felt that in terms of like growth in numbers and also growth in the game. Maybe we weren't hitting the goals that I internally had for our meta. And, you know, we've talked about this in a pre-show, and so we're going to do this recording. And this is kind of a complicated topic because it's difficult to talk about it without maybe sounding accusatory. But it's also very difficult to talk about it objectively because objective standards don't really exist for these things. You know, if I feel that we're not really doing a great job of growing the meta in terms of numbers, I have nothing else to compare it to, right? Other metas are not publishing their player retention data. So it could be, in fact, that we're doing great and I just, you know, my expectations are out of line. But what do you think of kind of this stagnation that I've expressed that I feel?
I mean, in one hand, I agree with you, but, you know, the same thing is, like, as far as data goes, and it's really hard to, like, really separate it from the fact that in-person play was just, like, killed for the better part of a year, right?
Right.
Like, I mean, to me, it's great that we're even just starting to see Malifaux come back so quickly now that in-game play is, like, starting to become a thing. Like, we have some new players expressing interest in it, and then, you know, the second that some of the other players have been fully vaccinated, they're like, all right, I can be there in like 2 weeks. Like, who wants to set up a game? Who wants to play?
Yeah. Yeah. I would say that, you know, it is heartening that there have been expressions of interest from people and our, you know, our community on Discord. We've been able to like sustain contact, I guess. Right. Like people haven't really, of course some players have just kind of drifted out of our orbit, but for the most part, the meta has managed to, even when it couldn't play live games, to engage with Malifaux on maybe a reduced level, but still do so to a certain extent.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I think as we talked about in the first episode, having like other ways of interacting with people outside of just being at the game shop, I think that's really what helped kind of kept the meta alive, because I feel like if we didn't have a Discord or some way of like talking to people, then I think our meta would just be completely dead because of this pandemic.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree. And so it's entirely possible that this, right, like the pandemic happened, but it's difficult to calibrate your mental expectations to the situation on the ground sometimes. Mm-hmm. I feel like if I am doing, you know, demos, if people are getting games in, like we should be at certain places. But, you know, the reality is, of course, there was a plague that kept people indoors for, you know, like 8 or 9 months. And then, you know, the vaccinations things are only really starting to reopen. So it is entirely possible, in fact, that we're doing a fine job, or, you know, in an absolute sense, or a fine job just relative to other groups. But what kind of made me feel this sense of stagnation in particular tonight, you know, kind of why I brought it up to you, is I was looking through the player data for, I forgot even what my initial objective was, but I happen to keep notes showing the demos that I've done. And for those of you who maybe those listeners who don't know, when we do a demo, we actually also give a crew box if the person liked the game, which most people, at least, you know, they're not going to say they had a terrible time to your face. So most people have taken a box. I think only one person has not. But I was able to see from my notes how many demos I was doing and how many boxes were going out. But I felt like we really weren't seeing people ever again. And so it made me like question how effective the demo procedure was, if I'm doing something wrong. Or, you know, if the demos are fine and we're actually retaining and growing at a good rate. But fundamentally, I feel as though, how do I say this? Like, it makes me wonder if something about our demo process is turning people off.
Right. And like you're saying, it's really hard to be objective about that, right? Because, I mean, I would have the assumption that we're both trying our best to make the demo experience as pleasant as possible. I mean, I guess you could just be sabotaging it. But I mean, I'll assume we're charitable. And like, you know, obviously there's probably things we can improve on, but like by and large, I don't think either of us have like anything we see as like severely deficient in how we're trying to introduce new players to the game or to like keep people interested in the game. And I feel like talking to you, one of the big things that just came up were kind of your expectations. Like you're saying how like you felt, you know, a lot of the people you demo to, they're not really coming back. And that just kind of brought me into like, now that I've started like branching out into some other games and kind of comparing, I guess, the amount of participation we see in the Malifaux meta at our local shop versus other games makes me to believe that as far as it goes in our local shop, I feel like the Malifaux meta is pretty healthy in the fact that we have regular game days, and if people want to get started with it, like they kind of have a person to talk to. You know, it's like either you or me. It's like these are the people that are usually playing Malifaux. They know a lot about it. They're very active in the Discord. And honestly, I think that's usually one of our selling points whenever we finish a demo. It's like we're one of the most active channels on the Discord. So you can ask us questions whenever, and we'll be more than happy to help you.
Yeah, I do think that the activity level and kind of the vibrancy of our community and like the overall positivity, right? Anytime you have a group of people, maybe not everyone is best friends with everyone, I can sincerely say that our group is a good group. I don't know people in the group that I would just be like get the fuck out of here. So I do think that our community is one of our strengths, and probably that's part of the reason why after the demos when we want to like encourage people, we say, hey, come to this other place where we talk about the game, because I think everyone who talks about the game is doing so in a way that is gonna maybe like help people feel more enthusiastic and gonna make people feel welcome. And if I felt that if our tenor was like abrasive or unfriendly, I definitely wouldn't be advertising the Discord channel to people I'm trying to convince to stick around.
Yeah, so I feel like one of the things we hit on when we were talking in the pre-show is I think we kind of like ended up where I felt like your expectation of what a successful demo conversion was probably, and I guess like this would be a great time. Like, part of the reason I think we're putting out this episode is we're really interested in what it's like for metas in other places, you know? I mean, one of the reasons we even started this podcast was because no one was really talking about what was happening on this side of the US, right? We're like, there's no podcast here. All the podcasts are like on the East Coast. And it sounds like, in comparison, you know, their metas for like tabletop gaming are much, I guess, more diverse and much healthier than it seems like it is on the West Coast.
Yeah, I'd agree. I mean, it's like pulling teeth just to, because travel is so terrible, right? It's a major deal, I think, just to get people to show up in California in a way that I think if you're listening to this in Ohio or in Michigan or on the East Coast, these places that have just really vibrant gaming communities, you might know of four or five stores all within a 20-minute drive where you could get a game, but that is just not the situation in California.
Yeah, so I guess like one of the things too, putting this episode out there is like hopefully maybe we can kind of use feedback from other places to kind of calibrate our expectations a little bit. I realize I didn't finish my thought, but we had been talking about how basically for you, a successful conversion is someone that kind of starts coming in like regularly, you know, more or less like every week for the regular game days, and I guess has like a level of commitment similar to like you and me have to, you know, the game at our local meta. And I guess part of the thing, like when we were talking about it, like it probably isn't the average person that's going to be like, I kind of like this game. Let's start a podcast so we can record our thoughts about it.
Yeah, I guess to provide a little bit of context, because our listeners don't have the pre-show discussion, but like you said, I felt that if I did a good job in the demo, then that would translate into an increased enthusiasm, like on a long-term basis, for the player in Malifaux. They're gonna want to come every week. They're gonna, we give them the core box, but they're gonna want to buy the stuff they need to get up to 50 stones. They're gonna want to buy the accessories like the Fatex that they're gonna need and whatever else. And it's just if that doesn't happen, if I don't see them again, I feel like I must have done a poor job in the demo, or something about me must have rubbed them the wrong way or whatever else. And as you kind of mentioned, that may not be a realistic expectation, right? And what I think we kind of came to is that while you can definitely very easily run a bad demo or a poor demo and just make the person not ever want to play the game or with you or just period again, you probably, it's a much more difficult prospect to positively increase somebody's interest in the game beyond like kind of a modest level and probably only for a modest time period.
Right, because I remember as we were kind of like going through it, and it's like, even while you're explaining to it, after a while, you're bringing up like kind of counter examples that kind of disproved your point. Just like, well, actually, after I gave them this demo, they just went and like bought all the extra stuff to get to a 50 stone crew like right after the demo.
Yeah. So I guess a large part of this is, you know, managing expectations. And we've talked about the importance of expectations kind of within the context of what people want from the game. And of course, that's obviously also very important in terms of keeping people involved in the meta. But the, I guess the analog or the corollary, at least from the standpoint of a meta organizer, is having a realistic expectation of what you actually can influence and what you can't influence. For some people, Malifaux is just not going to be their game, and you could be the nicest person in the world and you could have done a great job with the demo, and they may have even had, you know, they may have had fun playing the game, but it's just ultimately it's not for them, or there are better options for them. But within the context of like areas where you do have agency, because there's, you know, other than kind of recalibrating your expectations, there's not a lot you can do about things that you can't do anything about.
Mm-hmm.
Like, is there anything you've kind of thought about in the demo process that we could do a better job, or any like feedback that you've heard, or, you know, like, what is, I guess, your opinion about things people can do to positively impact the demo experience?
As far as positively impacting, you know, I think being very friendly and having painted crews and like making sure it's kind of smooth is very important. But I mean, at least for me personally, even though I've run a lot of demos, I find that it's really hard for me to find like a good balance between like a smooth introduction and explaining the rules.
Mm-hmm.
Like, as I've run more and more demos, I just try and get them like playing and moving things, moving guys around as quickly as possible. But then like during the demo, there's like so many things where I realize like I didn't explain how this works, or it's like I feel like as I start explaining it, it like links into all these other rules and I start over explaining, and like I can kind of start seeing like, you know, their eyes glazing over, but then I'm like too far in, and like if I just stop this explanation now, it's gonna be worse. It's like when you start telling a story you think is really funny, and then halfway through you're like, oh shit, like this is a terrible fucking story. Like every now and then that'll just happen when I'm like trying to explain interactions of the game. Like I just went way too far, but I'm like too deep in, I just have to like finish it and pretend that like I knew this was gonna happen.
Yeah, I think on the whole we do a decent job of the nuts and bolts of the demos, right? I mean, I think players come away with at least like a basic understanding of what they're going to be doing in a Malifaux game.
Mm-hmm.
But and you had mentioned this in a previous episode, that basically when you do a demo, what you're doing is a commercial for the game. And commercials, right, are not like packed full of honesty, right? Like pizza cheese does not really stretch like that when you're taking the slice off the, you know, from the box. But I feel like I should be convincing more people to play if I really am doing a good job. And so, you know... Am I doing a good job? Am I not doing a good job? If I do a good job, does it matter? Right? Like if I do an okay job, is that the same as doing a good job? It's all of this sense of being helpless or being really kind of unable to make progress that is kind of like was the heart of the frustration I felt, which kind of made me talk about this in the first place. And this might not be an episode where we like throw out a whole bunch of practical solutions. This might be kind of like a, you know, like a vent, like a rant or whatever. But I worry that my frustration with how I feel the demos are going may ultimately impact my enjoyment of Malifaux as a whole, or my commitment to the, you know, to the meta.
Yeah, and I mean, I feel like a big part of this was just trying to figure out, I guess, like some way of analyzing the process, because, you know, as you're saying, like, we really don't know what is a reasonable expectation. Like, it could just be that our numbers are terrible and we're doing something that's just very unproductive in terms of like trying to like help people into the realm of Malifaux. And, you know, like you said, like, people are gonna tend towards being polite. If we did something during the demo that they're like, seriously, man, like, you're going to do this, like, at the end of the demo, like, it's not like most of the people we're demoing are like friends of ours. It's like people we see at the store showed some interest, or in your case, like, people you summoned from Reddit. And, you know, like, they had a bad demo experience. They're not going to be like, you know, this demo is kind of shit. Like, okay, is there someone else that can teach me this game that's not you? They're going to be like, oh, yeah, thanks for the demo. It was a lot of fun. Like, I'll think about it. And then, you know, there's some people that are really going to think about it. And it's like, maybe this is something I enjoy. Like, I'm going to go research. Like, I'm definitely that type of person. Like, I'll play a demo of a game and then I'll go back and I'll, like, read everything I can about the game to try and see, like, if it's something I want, I can really, like, sink my teeth into. But then, of course, there's going to be times I say that I'm just like, nah, like, this is not the game for me. Like, I'm not doing that.
Yeah. Yeah. No, for sure. And I, a lot of this does come down to, you know, just the nature of personal interactions. And we've talked about this in the past too, that, you know, gaming is, it is a social interaction, right? This is something that, I think everyone understands, right? It's not newsflash, when you're playing a game, you're interacting with someone else. but you are trying to teach a reasonably complicated process, and you're also trying to get someone to like you. And because whether or not they like you is going to have a pretty significant impact on whether or not they thought they had a good time. And that can actually be pretty involved, especially if you, if you're not super motivated by trying to get people to like you. but I do think your point is well taken. It is difficult to understand in an objective sense whether or not you're actually doing a good job. It very well could be that we're doing fine. Mm-hmm. But what kind of makes me concerned that maybe we could be doing a better job, or you know, at least I could be doing a better job, is that I feel like we're stagnating, not in terms of numbers, but in terms of like growth in the game. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we've had players who've been playing for quite a while now. I kind of feel that, you know, maybe some of them should be further along in the game than they are. Like, I mean, I don't want to say in skill terms, but like, to use an example, which, you know, Kevin doesn't mind, so I'm sure he'll be fine if I use him in this example.
Throw him under the bus.
Well, he's moving to Alaska anyway, so what's he going to do?
So once people move out of our meta, it's like, fuck it. I don't have to hold back anymore.
What's he gonna do, like, hunt me down from Juneau or wherever godforsaken place he's
aren't like
to?
Gun laws like a lot less restrictive in Alaska?
Well, yeah, probably, but I'm still in freaking California. Like, if I have to go up there, then I'll start worrying. But you know, I was playing a game with Kevin pretty much the last game, the last opportunity we're gonna get before he moves away. I really like playing against Kevin. I mentioned this to you before. He's just one of my favorite opponents because he's just like a really fun guy I find he's really fun to play with. But there's a point where he's going to hit one of my models at a straight flip. And I'm like, okay, you know, it was a master or a henchman. I forget which one, but it's like, I'm going to stone to put it on a negative. And he's like, you can do that? And, you know, he's been playing Malifaux for, you know, almost 2 years now. And so I felt like a sinking feeling in my heart, like, that I personally have failed him, because, you know, to me, if he's been coming, you know, reasonably consistently, at least, you know, pre-pandemic, mm-hmm. that's, you know, he should have been further along in his understanding of the game. And it made me question, like, you know, am I doing a good job of teaching people the game? Like, you know, in the demo, we don't give them all the information. We just give them enough that they need, but, you know, am I doing enough to help them grow after the demo? If they do show up, are they feeling fulfilled? You know, is the experience that they're getting good? And it sent me into this spiral. And I don't want to call other people out and say like, oh, you've been playing for 2 years now, why do you still suck? I mean, that's not what I'm saying at all. But I guess I felt like I had expectations in terms of like where the meta would be in terms of the numbers. Like if I do demos and I do a good job, I'm going to get more people than I have. And also I felt like people would be further along in the game. And it just, it made me very concerned with how I've been doing things. What do you think about that?
So I guess to sum it up, basically you'd hope that there'd been more promotions from rank and file to more elite troop choices.
Well, I'm not going to call people rank and file.
You already did. You just have to lean into it now. I mean, on one hand, I kind of understand what you're saying. And on the other hand, I also feel like you're setting up an impossible standard to yourself. So, like, you're setting this expectation up to, you know, first of all, since you're running the meta, I mean, obviously you want to introduce more people into the game so we can have a strong and healthy meta. But then you're also kind of assuming responsibility for the rate at which they learn or the amount of time they spend on the game. Almost to the point where, like, I mean, obviously you're not going this far, but it feels like, you know, every week in the Discord, you're just going to post homework questions for, like, Malifaux. Like, how would you solve this issue? It's like, please DM me your questions and we'll have, like, a little prize for, like, the person with the most fleshed out answer. Because, you know, like, not knowing, like, certain aspects of the rules. Like, okay, I mean, I guess you could say, like, maybe after you play X games of Malifaux, you should know that you can stone to put an attack on a negative flip, but like how often does that usually come from your games? Like,
we mean the damage together. You mean the damage.
Sorry, the damage portion. So even I
now I feel like bad about how I've been helping you. Like, this whole thing is just a total blow to my self-esteem.
But I mean, like, we've played so many games against each other and I feel like we've only done that like a handful of times. But you know, it's like, I guess like the point is like how much responsibility can you take over of the growth of each individual person in your meta? And is that, like, to me, I don't really feel like that's a really reasonable standard to set to. And I guess on the same note, if anyone starts playing well, does that mean you take like responsibility, like every win I've had because you're the person that introduced me to the game is your win?
I'm not saying that, but yes. So I think if you, let's say you throw a party, right? Mm-hmm. If you see people are not having a good time, you're probably going to feel like personally responsible for their enjoyment, at least to a certain extent, right? Mm-hmm. Because I kind of do the organizing or the corralling for Malifaux, I do sort of feel a similar responsibility to provide a positive experience. And part of this stagnation concern that I have is that it may reflect a failure in that regard, right? Like, if we're not retaining people, is it not fun? Or if people aren't getting any better or, like, aren't growing in the game, are they just not having a good enough time, you know, to want to learn the rules for themselves? Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think it's kind of a reasonable sentiment to have, even if it's not, you know, strictly rational.
Yeah, I can understand where you're coming from, and as far as like the rationality part, I feel like that kind of goes into our expectations, right? Because like, again, we're spending our free time when we could be doing like any number of other things, like recording a little episode to talk about how we feel about the game. And then I feel like a level of your expectation is kind of based on your own experience with the game. And like, you know, like after 2 years, like I knew all these rules. I was very comfortable with this. But on the other side, you're also the person on the weird forums arguing about the correct resolution of rules. You know, we have like two episodes that are specifically about how, you know, like we had that You Make the Call episodes, our little mini series where like you and Jim are talking about how to resolve blast markers or how to resolve Take the Hit. That were things that were just addressed in the newest FAQ.
I'm not really like arguing. I'm not arguing. I'm just demonstrating the way it works, and then I am confirmed by Weird, you know, later in the year.
But like, I feel like, you know, your experience of the game is going to be wholly and completely different to the person that's like, I like this game, but I'm not going to go on the forums to like try and find the absolute truth of how to resolve this rule. Like, there's people that will go on. It's like, how are people resolving this? And if there's no way to resolve it, it's like, well, I guess we'll do this.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, like, we definitely go a step further. And I feel like a part of, like, I guess your failures, however real they may be, like, it could just be that, yeah, you're just, like, terrible at this. But it's going to be influenced by your own personal experience. And I feel like looking at the whole of, you know, even, like, the internet Malifaux community, which is a portion of the people that play it, like, even looking at our own local meta, that's very obvious that the number of people on our meta that are directly involved in discussions online is a very small portion of our actual, of the people that actually come in and play Malifaux.
Right. No, I mean, I would agree with that. But I do think that these stagnation concerns that I have, they're not purely emotional, or they're not purely like expectation based, because
mm-hmm.
we've actually kind of talked in the past about, like, if players, for instance, feel that they are just going to lose, right? That's mm-hmm. that's not always going to be a fun experience, right? So, you know, part of my concern is that if I see players after a couple of years still struggling with what I feel are kind of like basic rules, or still making kind of what I see as more like beginner mistakes or whatever, it makes me concerned that they are, you know, going to feel the frustration that you feel when you're just constantly getting dumped on, or mm-hmm. you know, in terms of like or rather kind of going back to the sense of stagnation in terms of the numbers,
mm-hmm.
if you're playing this against the same people every time, it can get kind of stale. You know, like you mentioned in the pre-show that if when you joined, if then other people hadn't joined, if it was just always you playing me, or even just, you know, you, Jim, and me, if it was just the three of us, that was probably not going to be a meta that would have survived long term. So
mm-hmm.
while I think, you know, you are entirely right that a lot of this is just kind of, you know, my own or our own expectations, and we do have to keep in mind like whether or not they're realistic or the limitations that we have on how accurately we can judge those things, there are practical concerns behind it, and the inability to measure these or to have a great sense of whether or not you're doing a good job only makes me more concerned about those like very real practical consequences.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can see what you're saying. So like, even if it's, I guess, you know, like it could be easy to hand wave and say like, oh, you don't have control over that. But I would agree that it's not like there isn't necessarily anything we can do, right? If someone's feeling frustrated by their lack of growth, maybe there are better ways for us to kind of address that. And I guess part of the reason why we have, I guess, a good portion of the episodes we release for our podcast kind of aimed more at like kind of a beginner's approach to the game and tactics is because we did want to kind of help out newer players just joining our meta with, you know, like having this information in a way that was kind of easily accessible and they could listen to in their free time without having to like necessarily directly like talk to one of us or, you know, spend all this time like hunting for the information in the shop or online or on our Discord.
Yeah, I mean, one of the great things about podcasts is you can take them on your own terms. Put them on during your commute, or I've heard some people paint their miniatures, so you could have it on in the background or whatever else. And yeah, it was my hope that this could be a useful resource for people who are interested in learning more about the game and just kind of hearing our perspective on it, because, you know, we don't claim to have the secret formula or anything, but our rationale may cause other people to consider something in a way that they hadn't before. And you're right, that is a major reason we're doing this podcast, and it's just another thing that makes me wonder, well, you know, are we doing a terrible job? Are we doing a great job? Who knows? And this is probably one of the things that, like we said, there's not like hard data on this, so if you're listening to this, we would love to hear your thoughts about this, you know, what your growth with the game has been like, you know, how you feel your local meta is in terms of, you know, its health, both numbers and skill improvement, and we hope if you have any thoughts on that that you'll send them our way. But since this is a recording we're doing right now, we can't just wait around for people to call in. So, Colgan, why do you think people maybe don't return after a demo, or, you know, stop playing maybe after they've been playing for a while? What are some things that you think may cause someone to either not get started or does to kind of lose contact with the game?
I think that I wish I had a better term. I feel like there's a good term for this, but I think most people have experienced this. Like, there might be some activity that you've done for, like, you know, a year or a couple months, and then for whatever reason, like, you have to stop. Like, maybe you got injured, or maybe like something came up. I think for me, there was a point where I was doing like drum lessons, and then I had to move, and I was like, oh, I don't think I can, you know, I can't attend this for like the next month. So I just told my teachers, like, you know, I'm just gonna stop for now, and I'll start once I have everything sorted out, because I have to like deal with moving, I have to deal with like payments and all that stuff. And I just never went back to it. And then like at this point, like, fuck, I don't think I would ever call them up. It's like, yeah, hey, like, it's been like maybe like a year or two, but
yeah.
Oh
no, go ahead.
I was just gonna say, and it's not like he did anything wrong, but I'm sure like he would be happy to have me back, and I don't. You know, it's like, it's not like I was ever a great drum player. I don't think he'd be like, man, this guy sucks. Like, I don't want to teach him. Well, but, you know, I don't think there'd be any hesitation. But just like from my part, it's just like, it's been way too long. Like, I should have, you know, called him like a year ago.
Basically, the last point that you made is what I was going to say, right? Even if I know that I will be positively received, not just, you know, accepted, but positively received. Like, hey, yeah, we missed you. It's great to see you back. Blah, blah, blah. That awkwardness of just having been out of touch for however long is surprisingly difficult to get over. And I guess if you're in our local meta and this applies to you, feel free to come back. We miss you. But yeah, that's one reason I think people do lose contact with the game. They were just out of touch for a while. And aside from, of course, like sort of the emotional awkwardness, there are practical aspects too, right? Malfo's not the easiest game in the world to play. So if you feel rusty, you know, you may not feel comfortable taking it up again. You might want another demo, but not really feel comfortable asking for a demo. Or, you know, if someone asks you for a game, you might feel that they're expecting a full game, but you don't feel up for playing that, you know, whatever else. So yeah, that is definitely one aspect that causes people to drop out. Something I think may cause someone to not take up the game in the first place, like after a demo, does kind of go back to what I was just saying, in that Malifaux is not an easy game to play. And if you are, you know, in the gaming hobby, like on a more casual basis, like pretty much any game will do for, you know, for what you're looking for, people tend to make the easy choice, right? So that why pick Malifaux, which is kind of asking a lot from its players, when you can, you know, play 40K or, I mean, I don't want to knock games. There's nothing wrong with simpler games. But my point is, there are easier options, and that fact might keep certain people from taking up the game.
Yeah, I think, I think in the long run is probably the right choice, but I definitely know that there have been, after, like, demos, and, like, some people are like, you know, I don't have a lot of time. I'm looking for games that I can play, like, quick. And then I'll be like, maybe Malifaux isn't quite the game for you. Because, you know, there are, like, a lot of skirmish games that you can finish in, like, an hour. And, like, even, like, your first few times playing, it's not going to take much more than that. But, you know, with Malifaux, I don't think I've seen one of the newer players, like, finish their, like, first solo game in, like, less than, like, 3 or 4 hours. And, yeah, so, you know, there are definitely real limits on Malifaux. Like, if someone only wants to spend like an hour in a game, like, even once you're comfortable with the rules, you know, like tournament games, which is supposed to be like competitive play where everyone knows what they're doing, you're looking at like 2.5 to 3 hours to finish games.
Yeah, although to be fair, because, you know, I do watch a lot of Vassal games, a lot of those tournament games do not go to time, or I'm sorry, do not finish within the allotted time. So Malifaux is a difficult game for people to play, even experienced people. And for many players, just because you're experienced doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to be a lot faster. You may be a lot better, what you're doing may be more effective, but not everyone is a fast player. So I do agree with you that, you know, Malifaux is difficult for a lot of reasons. That difficulty does increase the demands it puts on people. Another reason that people may not either take up the game or stick with the game, We have listed on our outline as the Necromunda problem, but I no longer really remember what that is, and I seem to recall it's, you know, your thing. So what is the Necromunda problem?
This could probably apply to any game, but I remember before I started playing at our current shop, I had tried to start a gaming meta at another store that really didn't have much of like a tabletop wargaming scene. And because I wasn't really tied to any game in particular at that point, my main goal was to just try and get people in playing a game. And like after that, I figured we could transition to other games if we wanted to, or you could start playing multiple games, because I didn't really want to care. I just wanted to play some games and have some people to play the game with.
Mm-hmm.
Because most of these games aren't very fun if you're playing solo.
Right.
So, you know, when I was looking around, like I was mainly looking at like Games Workshop stuff and like skirmish things because it takes less time. And when I was looking around and talking to people, I ended up like in a group chat with like 6 or 7 people, all who had Necromunda stuff, all wanted to play Necromunda and like talking about how great it could be if we got a demo. And I was like, all right, cool. Like, I'm willing to organize this. I'm willing to put in the time. I'm willing to run demos and teach people the game because everyone has stuff, but they haven't necessarily played it. I was like, all right, maybe you can set up a time. Like, I'm free on the weekends. I can do weekdays too if people give me enough time because the shop is pretty close to me. And like, no one ever responded. Like, I was like, all right, I'm going to be there. And then, you know, at a point I was like, all right, I'll just set a time and see if people will come. Because there's a lot of times people are hesitant to really like be active in taking your time.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, all right, I'm going to be there on like Friday at 9. I'm going to be like there next week, Saturday in like the afternoon if people want to come and play. And like no one ever responded, like never heard from any of those people again. And I was just like, I think I figured out why you guys have never played a game of Necromunda.
Yeah, I think, you know, for some people, they're never gonna play a game, right? They're gonna talk about how they'd love to play a game. They subscribe to these YouTube channels with you know, playing the game or painting the miniatures or whatever. But for whether it's just that they can't fit it into their lives, or they sincerely mean it when they say they want to play, but something more important to them always happens to come up. There's just some people who just, they're not really players. And there are some members of kind of our, well, I don't really know if we can call them members at this point, but there are people who played games with us at the store who are mostly at the store for social reasons, like to hang out or whatever. And they don't really care that much about playing games. And when they do play games, they don't really care that much about what game they're playing. And when we run a demo for them, or when I see them and they don't play Malifaux, you know, again, that kind of feeds into like my sense that I've not done a good job of advocating for the game or teaching them the game, or they didn't have a good time in the demo. But the reality could just be that, hey, it's just not a super high priority for them to play the game. So I think that's part of kind of what you've described as the Necromunda problem. I like to say that if 10 gamers say they're going to be somewhere, then like the day of, you have 2 gamers and like 1 apology and you don't even hear from the other 7. Gamers are just kind of unreliable people in my experience. And because what we're doing is a game, because it's just a hobby, it's for fun, a certain class of person doesn't really think that much about like other people's time, right? Like, you know, some people, they'll say they'll be at the store to play you at 2:00, and then you're there at, you know, 1:45 ready to go, and they text you at like 3:30, I'm not going to make it.
Mm-hmm.
And so there are just people who, because it is a game, they don't really think of it as a commitment you're making to other people. And then of course there's people who do realize it's a commitment and they're just not willing to make any other commitments. So they'll talk about the game, but they won't really play it. But I think the Necromunda problem, as you've termed it, is relatable. I think most people have been in a similar situation before. But I guess this is a good opportunity to kind of transition from reasons that maybe people don't play into what actually does success look like. We talked about this might just all be in our heads. So what do we think kind of, you know, as objectively as possible, what do successful demos look like? You know, one thought I've always had is that if I do a demo for someone And then they ask me a bunch of questions, and you know, maybe they buy some stuff, like maybe they fill out the rest of their crew to get the 50 stones or whatever. Like, in my mind, that's like, oh, wow, I did a great job. But we've had that happen, and those people, you know, in some of these cases that have kind of caused us concern, they haven't come back either. So, you know, what do you think a successful demo looks like, or what indications would you sort of use to judge whether or not your demo has been successful?
I guess, like, one of the things that can kind of cloud it a bit is, even if your demo is successful, you might not necessarily see it benefit your local meta, right?
Right.
So I guess one of the things I talked about is kind of like the word of mouth. Like, I feel like we've done a good job at, I guess, our commercialized version of Malifaux. If that person, the next time we see them, is like, hey, I brought my friend, and they want to learn and play as well. And I was thinking, you know, like, Liam, you know, who was a big part of our meta at the beginning, like, he's gotten, like, to his friend in other states when they visited him, like, he's taught them Malifaux and played Malifaux games with them. And it's like, we've never seen them. Right. They're never coming to the store. But, I mean, it's like, I would say, you know, I guess at this point it sounds kind of dumb to say it's like because we gave a good demo, but like I feel like we did a good job at introducing him to the game, because like he enjoyed it enough that he wanted to share the experience with other people, even though, you know, it'll never benefit our particular meta.
Right. Yeah, and this is something I think it's not zero sum, right? It's not if we don't get a player, then we've lost. Or, you know, we did a bad job, because, like you said, you know, it could just work out because of circumstances, because of life and stuff like that, that someone could have had a good time and they might even pursue the game at some point in some context, but still not, you know, still not be an active participant in our local meta. But the thing is, you know, when I do the demos, you know, spoiler alert, I'm not doing them to be a great guy, right? Like, I'm doing them for my own benefit. I'm trying to get other people into the group, which benefits me. So it makes me, you know, makes me feel as though I've not been successful when people don't play, even if actually they had a good time, and even if they do end up taking the game up in another context. But, you know, I do think it's fair to say that the demo could very well be counted as a success if someone comes away with an interest in Malifaux, even if it doesn't, for whatever reason, translate into direct increased play within the way that, you know, maybe I was hoping. What would, you know, maybe be another indicator of success to you?
This might not quite be it, but I was kind of thinking about it, because, you know, a lot of times when we talk about Malifaux, even in our first episode of the podcast, we kind of talked about our introduction to the hobby as a whole, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we both started with like Games Workshop stuff, and then even in this episode we're kind of like trashing how we don't play like 40k or most Games Workshop games anymore. But, you know, whoever introduced us to the game, I would, you know, to Games Workshop, they're successful. I mean, like, here I am like 20 years later and I still love like super gluing together little miniatures and painting them so I can like push them around on a table, even if it's not Games Workshop stuff, and if I don't have any inclination to play that game. So I feel like, you know, if we get people who don't have a lot of experience with, you know, tabletop games, and we introduce them to Malifaux, it's like, oh, Malifaux is really fun. And then they find out about all these other games, and it turns out that, you know, while they did have fun with Malifaux, and we did a good job of introducing the game, like, there's another tabletop game that just fits them way better, and they just end up dropping Malifaux in favor of it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and maybe not even Malifaux. Maybe they just drop games entirely, right? We have people who I think are introduced to the store through our Malifaux meta, but they might, you know, be more there for the social aspect or whatever, and they may not be playing Malifaux, or they may not be playing really much of anything, but you might still see them around the store all the time, and that could very well be counted as a successful demo. And, you know, of course, doesn't just because people don't play Malifaux or, you know, don't play many games doesn't mean that they won't play games in the future too. So that is something useful to keep in mind. Moving on from demos, you know, what do you think success looks like in terms of like players growing with their journey with the game? Because this is something that we've kind of talked about, or at least we touched on in the past. It's also kind of difficult to talk about because you don't want to be like, geez, these guys, like, they've been playing for 2 years and they still suck. but, you know, what do you, if the goal, because I don't, and I'm sure you feel similarly, or at least, you're going to pretend like you do to not sound terrible, is to get players who are going to provide an experience other than just getting curb stomped, right? You know, as fun as it can be to win, it gets pretty stale if you just come in and roll people every time, no matter what you do. You know, I want people to grow in the game. I know you want people to grow in the game. So what are some indications that you're doing that successfully?
I feel like in terms of like growth and teaching, I feel like you need to adjust your expectations to the person. And I guess this kind of like comes into the idea of like understanding that like everyone is into the game for a different reason and everyone comes to the game with a different background. If you've played other tabletop games, you're going to pick up Malifaux much more easily, right?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas for other people, when they're starting from zero, you know, it's going to take them longer to even get to the point where they understand these kind of, I guess, universal concepts to the game.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I remember, I've been mentioning Liam a lot, but I remember we'd been playing a lot. Every time we had games, we kind of like go over, he'd ask me like, oh, what do I think he could do better? And I remember the first game I played against him where because he had been playing Reva a lot and he had his lamp pad, and it's like he could have charged and attacked one of my guys and possibly killed it. But he decided to like walk past him and then like drop a scheme marker to score a scheme in a place I couldn't stop it. And I was like, oh my God, it's happening. And like, I don't know, it was like, and that game ended up like pretty close. And it was just like, it was just really cool to see him, you know, like starting to like click and understand that like, you know, there are, like his lamp pads were just like moving so far to the point where I was like, I don't like my chances of like trying to chase after him and stop him.
Uh-huh.
So I'm just going to let like his lamp pad do his thing, because even if I get, you know, like even if I engage him, he's just going to like bonus away.
Right.
And then like he had so many pyres, like I'm not gonna really kill him. I was like, all right, I just need to try and score points elsewhere. And like, yeah, it ended up being a really close game. It was just cool to see him like starting to adapt and learn and, you know, kind of play more towards like the strategy and the schemes instead of like just trying to, you know, wipe me off the board.
Right. Yeah, I mean, to mention Kevin again, Kevin's signature move used to be to charge the poltergeist across the table. You know, all the guys were charging across the table, but the poltergeist was always leading the way whenever he played Pandora, which at the time I think was kind of his main. He later moved on to Titania. But, you know, at a certain point, he learned not to do that anymore, and that is improvement. So the fact that we can kind of identify these and plenty of other examples is an indication, in fact, people are growing in the game, and maybe specific things that occur like kind of have an outsized place in my memory, but may not actually indicate any fundamental failing. But if people do want to get better at the game, it's kind of hard to like come up with a list. We were like trying, actually. It's kind of hard to come up with a list of things like how to help people improve in the game, because everyone is in a different place in the game, and everyone also takes these kinds of lessons differently. And even if you are experienced and you feel kind of qualified to, you know, help a less experienced player, how you view the game is probably not going to be anywhere near the same as how other people do. So this, I think, goes fundamentally to how you mentioned expectations, but it's very well maybe possible that this sense of, oh, like, the meta is stagnant in terms of people are not really getting any better. That might just be that, oh, people's trajectory with the game has not been the same as yours, or the same as what you thought someone's, you know, a prospective new player's would be, rather than any indication that you have fundamentally failed to help them improve in the game.
Yeah, and kind of playing off that, like, different play styles, I feel like, you know, especially in Malifaux, because masters play so differently from one another, sometimes it just takes longer for people to find the master that fits them. And I feel as far as, like, learning, like, you know, you and me, I think, approach Malifaux in very different ways at, like, a basic strategy level.
Mm-hmm.
You've said before that you tend to be a much more defensive player, and like trying to, you know, kind of get the small advantages and hold on to them. Whereas, like, I tend to be a much more aggressive player and just basically try to build a big enough lead that I can screw up and still win. And yeah, like, as far as like how other people grow, I would imagine that if I'm, you know, giving advice or like the way I view the game to a person with a more aggressive playstyle, it'll probably make a lot more sense, or, you know, they might pick up things faster than if you were to teach them, and vice versa. Like, my playstyle will probably fail for someone who takes a more defensive approach to the game.
So, kind of, I think what's frustrating about this topic is that the answer, like so many of our episodes, is it depends, right? Like, our listeners are just totally sloshed. Hopefully, you know, they're drinking cheap stuff, because you could very well go broke playing the Other Coast drinking game. But, so because all of this is so subjective, am I just, like, out in left field? Are you not feeling, like, this sense of stagnation that I felt like when I came to you with this sentiment? Or were you just thinking, like, what's this guy talking about? Or, you know, do you think there maybe is something to it, at least in your subjective experience of the meta?
I feel like it's true to a degree. I guess just the part I struggle with is whether or not this is normal. And if it is, like, what can we, well, like, what are effective ways to kind of deal with it? You know, because, like, there's, like, the way I approach games, how I like really researching, reading the strategy, reading up all this stuff, like, that's not for everyone. And that's not necessarily, like, the best way to get good at a game, right? Because it's all going to depend on how people learn. So, I mean, like, I definitely would love to see, you know, like, our meta grow bigger and to see a lot of people who are more interested in playing competitive lists so we can try out some of, like, the weirder, wackier things. But, you know, like, I'm not sure how much of that is just, you know, like, this is just kind of the normal part of growing a group. Like, is it just that because we're in California that it's harder to get people? Maybe if we're on the East Coast, like, our meta would be, you know, flourishing even though we're doing the exact same things. Like, it's just really hard for me to understand how much is controllable and how, you know, like, where our efforts should be placed and whether or not it's even effective.
Right. Yeah, I mean, all communities, I'm sure, experience ebb and flow. And of course, you know, we mentioned several times there aren't really objective data points that we can point to. But also, there's the pandemic, right? which even if there were objective data sets, the pandemic year is such an outlier that the data probably wouldn't be applicable to our situation yet. So, yeah, I mean, your point is well taken. And there are things we can control and things we can't control. And, you know, ultimately, it is difficult to kind of assess where that line is. So we just sort of have to do the best job that we can. But one thing that distinguishes Malifaux from the other games at our store, and this is, you know, obviously a very specific situation to us, but maybe other listeners have experienced a similar thing, is that while many other games are played, they're played on more of a pickup basis or more of like an individually organized, like, hey, you know, does anyone want to play 40K on Tuesday or whatever? And someone will say yes or, you know, whatever happens. Malifaux is pretty much the only game, I almost say only game, but Malifaux is one of the most structured experiences at the store, right? Like, we have set days that we are there, that people are playing games. And that kind of structure, like, in my mind, should be positive. People can have the sense of understanding that if they come down, they can get a game, so they're not going to have wasted trips or whatever. But there could be negatives with the game being so specifically associated with specific people.
Yeah, I mean, I could see that, because as far as like the regular game days, I know, like, on weekends or some days when you're just not able to make it, I kind of become the backup. And, you know, like, not a negative thing, but, like, I'm not sure how common that is, right? It's like, oh, you know, normally I feel like if you run on Saturdays, like, oh, I can't make it in on Saturdays, but you guys can still play. But in our case, it's like, you'll message me. It's like, oh, I can't make it on Saturday. Can you go in and, like, you know, make sure everything's running smoothly?
And I mean, you know, maybe I don't have any obligation. You don't have any obligation specifically that people have a good time. But I guess it just kind of goes back to that, the party analogy we made earlier. But, you know, because the game is kind of associated with us, if someone has a negative connotation with us, like if they don't really like us or like playing with us, even if they think we're fine outside of games, that could be another thing that kind of inhibits growth, right?
Right. And I feel like also, you know, it could also create this expectation that if, you know, Jeff and Colgan aren't able to show up Saturday, then the game days can't. And just even if people would normally be able to go and play, because it's so heavily associated with us always being there to make sure things run smoothly, I feel like the opposite assumption is if we're not there, then it's just off and we're not doing it, which is obviously not what either of us want.
Yeah, in fact, it's the opposite of what we want, because a healthy meta is one that can persist without us, right? That has enough steam that it goes on its own power. But the reality is, if we stop playing Malifaux, like, Malifaux would probably die at the store.
Yeah, or at least in the current form. Like, I don't think there's going to be, you know, if we stop playing, it's not going to be people who are like, hey, let's, you know, let's keep playing on Saturdays or Wednesdays. I think it'll fall off to, like, kind of the pickup game thing that we see with most other things. Like, oh, I can be in on Thursday for a game of Malifaux. Like, who wants to play?
Right. Now, you know, another kind of consequence of the fact that the Malifaux days are sort of structured is it might give the impression of like a level of expected like formality or expertise or whatever that maybe a casual pickup arrangement doesn't have. Whereas the reality is, as you know, kind of we mentioned, in fact, we do demos and we give crew boxes or whatever, we would love for new people to just walk in from the street and be like, oh, wow, you guys play Malifaux? Can I try? Or like, you know, what's the details or whatever? But the very fact that we're like, hey, you know, we're playing Malifaux this Saturday, who can make it, blah, blah, blah. The fact that we have this structure may make people, like, hesitant to become involved on any basis. Or maybe if they can only do it casually, maybe they think that, oh, well, they wouldn't be welcome unless I can really commit to it.
Yeah, I mean, I think on the same note, you know, if they're like, oh, I only really have time on Tuesdays, they might think, well, I shouldn't even bother trying to get a game of Malifaux because they play, you know, Wednesdays and Saturdays. And if I can't make either of those 2 days, then I just probably can't play Malifaux.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's kind of, it's kind of sad to think that, unintentionally, of course, but you, and not you as Colgan, but you as a person, or I suppose one, I should say, that one could be doing something that is inhibiting enthusiasm in a game or in a community that, in fact, you're actively trying to grow and to grow to a stage to where it's no longer really dependent on you or even associated particularly with you.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess, you know, on the upside, of course, the fact that we do have a level of organization that is, I mean, either unique or pretty unusual with games at the store has resulted in the fact that Malifaux is played consistently over a long time span. And really, you know, only Games Workshop games, and Games Workshop is such an anomaly because it's just a Goliath in the industry, but only GWs can really compare with our sustained track level or track record of activity.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, as far as like, you know, benefits and drawbacks, I do feel like another benefit of us, I guess, being like the Malifaux guys is if anyone has interest, they're like, oh yeah, like Colgan and Jeff are always giving demos. You can talk to them. Where I know for like some other games, when people are first starting to get into it, they're like, you know, it's kind of like the pickup thing. Like, you'll they'll just drop in the chat. It's like, hey, you know, I'm kind of interested in this game. Like, would anyone have time to like try and teach me? And some people might not feel comfortable asking that. Whereas I feel like in the store, at least, if anyone like looking at Malifaux stuff or having an interest, they're like, oh yeah, you can talk to Jeff or Colgan. They run demos all the time. Like, it's because we've been, or I guess because you've been so consistent about it, like, everyone kind of knows the spiel and can give it for you, and that might catch people who might otherwise be uncomfortable just asking to take people's time to teach them a game.
Yeah, and this is also a positive of our, you know, our good relationship with Mike, the store owner, right? Because he knows that we're reliable people, which is an important part in scheduling. If you make a schedule but you don't show up, the schedule is useless. In fact, it's worse than useless because it could cost people time.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we've established a track record of reliability and, you know, not being completely terrible. So Mike, as the store owner, feels comfortable recommending us, even if someone comes in, you know, during the week to buy Malifaux stuff or whatever. He feels comfortable saying, hey, look, I see you play Malifaux. Like, there's a community here. This is the situation. And we've had people that have been introduced in that way. So there are definite pluses to the structure. I just think it's interesting that, you know, I thought of the structure as being objectively a good thing and didn't really think about some of the, you know, maybe some of the implications of it that could cause people to be hesitant or maybe might give people impressions that I certainly didn't intend. So moving on now to our last topic, you know, things to try to either grow or to retain players or to, you know, just kind of try to improve the health of your meta. First up we have is, you know, talking to people who've stopped playing and you know, trying to figure out, you know, what their sentiment is about the game and kind of if there's, you know, what their situation is. And this obviously isn't like confronting people like, hey, I see you, like, why aren't you here for Malifaux? But like, have you really done this much? Have you talked to some of the people who maybe did play more actively and maybe aren't as active now?
You know, now that I mentioned that first fight, I distinctly remember several instances of you calling out people who come into the shop and asking them why they're not playing Malifaux anymore.
Hey, they know when the day is. They should be ready to play if they're in the store. I mean, they can watch Escape from New York anytime they want, but they can only get a game in Malifaux on Wednesdays and Saturdays, because as we already went over, that's the only time you can play.
I mean, we kind of went over it a little bit, but I do know, like, part of the reason is sometimes it's the time commitment, other times it's just they stopped playing for a couple months, and then it's kind of daunting to get back in because, yeah, Malifaux is a very deep game compared to a lot of other tabletop games out there. And, you know, I even talked about this, and I've definitely heard other people talk about it, how, like, we kind of need other games to take a break from Malifaux sometimes. Mm-hmm. And, like, sometimes those breaks go on long enough that they're like, I don't even know how to play Malifaux anymore. Right. And so they stop.
Well, so I think this was, you know, 75 minutes or whatever of us saying it depends. And then talking about, like, how we've, you know, basically are screaming into the void here. But, you know, I think about this quite a lot because I worry, you know, I worry sometimes about how I come across. And I kind of take as feedback because, kind of like we touched earlier, very few people are like, this game is terrible, or you're a horrible person, or whatever. So I kind of take not seeing someone again, or seeing, you know, someone dropping out of the game as that, right? Like, as their way of saying, like, I didn't have a good time, or I don't like you personally, or whatever it is. Whereas, as we've discussed, obviously, it's not that simple. In fact, it probably has nothing to do with me. Most people had a fine time, but maybe, you know, not enough to keep them going, or they have something else that they can do that they like just as much, it's easier, or whatever the reason is. It's good, I think, to ask the questions, which we've done, but it maybe isn't super productive to draw conclusions, which is kind of where I had been in the point where we were talking about in the pre-show when I was kind of saying, oh, geez, you know, maybe I'm doing a terrible job. And an important thing of that I think I've gotten from this process of this episode is that, you know what, it's not about me. And it's hard for me to accept that. But yeah, there are things in the world that aren't about me. And this just might be one of them.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I think it's good to kind of pose the questions. I feel like it's always good to kind of examine your actions and think about what you can do to improve, even if it's not necessarily realistic. You know, like, you know, maybe if we just, like, freaking bankrolled Malifaux at the store, like, you want it, you got it, we'll buy it for you. Like, okay, sure, maybe we would get a lot more participation. And, you know, there might be some interesting conversations to be had from that perspective, but, like, it's not really a realistic solution. But I think it can lead to interesting discussion or at least some content for a podcast episode.
Right. Although, I mean, I was ready to go into the wrap-up, but actually this reminded me of something. You know, I started providing these crew boxes because I was able to get several really cheap, like, just from this guy who sells, like, scratch and ding-type merchandise. So the packaging is damaged, but... you know, the insides are fine. So, you know, there are people who buy that stuff up and then they sell them on Amazon or on eBay or whatever. So I've been able to get boxes in that way. And generally, if I can get a box for $35 or $40, that's usually like kind of where I'll buy one. But I'm curious actually whether or not the boxes have actually improved the conversion rate at all. Like if someone doesn't like the game, getting a couple plastic miniatures is not going to be enough to make them think, oh yeah, this was awesome. And if someone did really like the game, they're probably not going to be deterred by the need to buy a box. So do you think it actually does help at all, it having these crew boxes?
Well, obviously now we need to do like a blind test, right?
One thing it might do is it might communicate like our willingness to help people. Mm-hmm. Like, hey, we want to get you into the game like enough to, hey, here's like a $50 free box or whatever. But at the same time, it might add to sort of like the vanishing player thing, right? Like, oh, I played, I had fun, I got this box, but you know what? I'm actually not really willing to play that much. And so I don't want to like let down these guys who gave us this free thing. So maybe I'll just kind of like, I mean, ghost is a negative term, but maybe I'll just sort of like let it slide, right? Mm-hmm. So I mean, I do hope that it doesn't really create that expectation or create in people a sense of an expectation. Because it really is just meant to be an easy way to get people into the game. Yeah, I mean, what do you think? Because you can't dodge with, like, we need more data.
I would imagine that it would be positive in conversions, right? I mean, because, you know, as we always say, it's like, oh, you just need, like, a core box and a few guys. But there's so many masters in Malifaux. Mm-hmm. So for someone who just wants to get in the game and maybe try, you know, it might help out with, like, decision paralysis, right? Instead of having, like, you know, these 50-odd masters to, like, pick from and read in. It's like, hey, we have these, like, five boxes. Choose one that looks kind of cool and you can start with them.
Yeah, I mean, I could see that. If those of you out there, you know, if you've built up your own meta or, you know, you've thought about it or even if you just have random conjectural ideas about it, you know, let us know. We are, as you know, now we're passing the 120 mark pretty soon. So it's obvious we're pretty serious about this as a topic. You know, it's something that we think about. And we are open to improving, and we're also, you know, just kind of very interested in what other metas have experienced. And obviously, the pandemic has had quite a large impact on gaming, as in very, you know, other areas of life. So it can be hard to sort of disassociate causes from the pandemic, right? Like compared to other, you know, I guess routine ways that people maybe lose interest in the game or stop kind of improving, but. Please let us know what your experience has been. We play just in one small corner of the globe, but we're very interested in being part of the wider Malifaux community, and that's one reason we're doing this podcast. And thank you very much to Weird for now retweeting our episodes. That has helped us reach more people. If you've enjoyed this episode, we'd love to hear any kind of feedback. You can hit us up on Facebook or on Discord, or you can send us emails. We can get voicemails from Anchor, and we have gotten a couple, and those have been super cool. Shout out to all of our Patreon and PayPal backers. If you would like to support channel in that way, that is just incredibly appreciated. It helps us get, you know, better hosting, and it helps us with our audio gear and all that stuff. So, you know, the podcast, it's not so much that it depends on your support, but we definitely do appreciate support in any form, whether it's feedback or monetary or even just a listen. With that, I think that's all I have for tonight. So, good night.
Night, everyone.